Have you ever thought of hiring a personal trainer? How do you find a good one, and what can you expect from them? Today we're talking with fitness and weight loss expert Tom Venuto to get the inside scoop. All this and much, much more on episode 56 of Fat to Fit Radio.
Welcome to Fat to Fit Radio, your source for real weight loss solutions without the hype. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Ainsley and Russ Turley.
Welcome, everyone, to show number 56. We have a jam-packed show, including an interview coming up real soon, but let's get into to our show.
And the first section is the Keeping It Real section. And Russ, when we started this podcast, you were just shy of 300 pounds. A year into the show, you were down about 50 pounds. At the start of this year, you were 250. So how are you doing 6 weeks into this year? Are you hitting your goals?
Pretty close here, down to 244.3, almost at 6 pounds in 6 weeks. As far as my goals, my eating goals this week, probably 9 out of 10. And exercise goals, 1 out of 10. Bad news there. So my motivation for the week, I give it about a 3 out of 10.
Well, I understand you had a pretty tough week. Why don't you tell our listeners about it?
Yeah, I don't want to, it's kind of timeless here on the podcast. It'll be there forever. But I just had a surgery on the back. And nothing too big, but it got infected, and so I've got this wound on my back that I can't really exercise or do anything too strenuous with it. And so I'm kind of sidelined for the next maybe 3 to 4 weeks with really not doing much but walking and going to work.
Well, you're still right on your goal, 6 pounds in 6 weeks. So keep up whatever you're doing right now. It must be that your eating plan and your program is just working really good. So just keep it up.
Yeah, because I can't exercise, I really have to tighten up the calories and make sure I'm eating right on what my calorie goal and each week, each day.
But that's awesome because life is going to throw you some curveballs and you are dealing with it and it's working out really well.
Well, let's get into our email and comments section for this week. And our first email was from Alex, and he was commenting on a post from January 2008.
That's right. This came in from Alex, and he was referring to this post that was pretty much an entire year ago, and it was entitled Exercise Heart Rate Versus Fat Loss. We'll have a link in the show notes so you can look it up again. But the overall purpose of this article was to discuss the myth of the fat burning zone with regards to heart rate. The most important thing with regard to fat loss was the overall total amount of calories burned over a 24-hour period, not the actual length of the workout. At the end of the article, I mentioned that the rule of thumb that we've all heard about how to calculate a person's maximal heart rate is 220 minus their age, and Alex responded.
As an exercise physiologist, I can tell you that using the rule, subtract your age from 220 to get your maximum heart rate, and setting your 85% level from that is a very poor, possibly dangerous way to set your level of aerobic exertion. That sort of rule of thumb, although widely used, is very, very inaccurate. For about 1 out of every 3 people, it will either badly underestimate or badly overestimate their safe or ideal level.
It sounds very scientific, but it is sloppy and not as scientifically justified as gyms and trainers seem to think it is. The problem is that an individual's maximum heart rate at whatever age are poorly predicted by that formula. And of course, there's a big difference in the wisdom between someone who's 65 and been running 10Ks all their life and running at 85% of their maximal heart rate, and someone who's 65 and has been a couch potato and obese going out looking at the chart and trying to run sustained at whatever the chart says is 85% of their maximum heart rate.
Better to forget looking at heart rate charts and perhaps even ignore taking your pulse rate and instead use this rule of thumb. When you reach a sustained level of speed that makes you just breathless enough that you would find it uncomfortable to carry on a sustained conversation with a person moving alongside you, that's about the maximum safe level for many persons, particularly if presently or not highly conditioned, and it's just above the level that will give you optimal heart and lung and circulatory conditioning. Of course, lower levels can also be highly beneficial, and higher levels will be beneficial for those in good health training for competitive sports.
So that's really some good advice from a professional who knows what he's talking about. And we really appreciate, especially professionals in the health industry or the medical industry, who are commenting and giving us great advice that we can pass on to our listeners. So thanks, Alex.
All right. And our second email comes in from Karen. And she wrote, Russ and Jeff, I stumbled across your series of podcasts on iTunes a couple weeks ago. I absolutely love your no-nonsense, no-tricks-up-your-sleeves approach to healthy weight loss. Like many out there, I have been guilty of trying just about every fad diet out there. I'm 5'10", and at my heaviest last year, weighed 192 pounds. I've always been active and loved weightlifting since I completed a Body for Life challenge in 2001. My problem with weight loss has been the ever-confusing question of how many calories do I need for fat loss.
Attempting to stick to between 1,200 and 1,500 calories, I would always lose in the first few months and then come to a screeching halt, get frustrated, and give up. I have never really heard of your philosophy, and I think it is the most sensible, no-brainer solution. Prior to finding your website and podcast, I had lost 30 pounds and I am within 20 pounds of my goal. I had come to a plateau and was beginning to think that this is where my body wants to be. After reading your method, I slowly began adding more calories and more calories back into my diet, up to my goal weight's maintenance. Miraculously, the weight is coming off again, and I don't feel deprived or like I'm dieting at all. Thank you both for your insight, advice, and useful information. And this is just awesome. About a third of the email that we receive right now is from people struggling with their diets simply for the same reason that they're dieting at a level that's way too low in calories. In my opinion, everyone needs to know what their basal metabolic rate is and then never eat below those calories. That's going to keep you out of a plateau and out of starvation mode. It's really easy to find out. Just search on the internet for BMR calculator. You just enter in your height and weight and whether you're female or male, and it will give you the amount of calories never to eat below. It's just that simple.
Yeah, it just does my heart good to think that I have to eat more calories than all these diets have always told me about, and I will lose weight. It's just, it's a great thing.
But we're really talking about this maintenance level and this lifestyle that you're just going to keep eating the same amount of food for the rest of your life and never go on or off a particular diet. And it's great to hear people that saying, yes, we've been dieting really hard, not getting results. We eat way more calories and it's now working. That is just totally perfect when we hear people getting the results that we're preaching for them to do.
Exactly. So I want to thank Alex and Karen for sending in their comments. And you can do so as well. The first way to do that is by leaving a comment on the website at fat2fitradio.com.
Or you can send us an email to podcast@fattofitradio.com.
Third way is by leaving a voicemail by clicking on the Call Me button over on fat2fitradio.com.
Or you can join our support group at fattofitsupport.com.
All right, well, let's get into our news items on this week's web report. What great article do you have for us this week, Jeff?
Well, I have the absolute worst food in America for 2009. And this comes from Men's Health, and they are ranking all of the bad foods out there. And the absolute worst thing that you never want to go out and eat is a Baskin-Robbins large chocolate Oreo shake. Now, this is just a milkshake, but it's coming in at 2,600 calories, 135 grams of fat, 59 grams of that is saturated fat, 2.5 grams of trans fats, 263 grams of sugars, 1,700 milligrams of sodium. So this is just a milkshake from Baskin-Robbins, which has more calories than the average person needs to eat an entire day. And just to give you an idea, last year, the worst food in America was also from Baskin-Robbins, which was the Heath Bar Shake. So they've really even made it worse. I'm sure people think this tastes really good, but really, that's almost, you know, 3/4 of a pound of fat that you can put on if you're eating at your maintenance level and then have one of these chocolate shakes. Just a horrible concoction.
Yes. You know, if you ever make a shake, even at home or watch somebody make one, and I used to work at a frozen yogurt place, I know the amount of product you put in one of those is just incredible. You know, with yogurt, it wasn't so bad, but with ice cream, there's so much put in there. It's like eating quadruple or, you know, at least the scoops of ice cream, just sucking it through a straw. So I've the fact that it's one of the worst foods in the country, it's not even surprising at all.
Well, Russ, you mentioned that you also had something about food this week. So what do you have?
Well, you know, it's funny enough. You picked an article about bad food, and I was using the old sort of stumble upon, and I found a blog called thisiswhyyourfat.com. And basically what this person does here is gets pictures from around the internet of these gigantic, massive, or extremely fatty foods that people are creating and or eating. And I'm looking at here one right now. Since you mentioned ice cream here from the Baskin-Robbins, it's The Gastronomic Surprise Maxi Rainbow 24 Scoop Ice Cream Sundae. It looks just, it's gigantic. It's a bigger than this woman's whole head. There's also here a 60-pound Rice Krispie treat. There's the meat ship. It's made from bacon, sausage, pastries, franks, and pork mince. I don't even know what the half that stuff is. Deep-fried Coca-Cola. It just everything on this blog is something you want to avoid. But it's kind of fun to see what all these little dives around the country are making. And, you know, some of these things are very regional or kind of a one-off item. But definitely avoid every single thing on this list. But take a look at it because it's kind of fun to check out all these disgusting foods.
Well, I think it really speaks to our culture in just total excess of food. These are the largest amounts of food that you could ever imagine even trying to eat, and they're the worst foods. Everything is fried and just over-processed, and it's just, I think it's just crazy that there's so many restaurants out there that is just serving absolutely ridiculous food that is thousands and thousands of calories, and it's almost like a competition. We talked last year about a place called the Heart Attack Grill. Well, obviously, judging by this blog here, there are hundreds of restaurants that are very similar to it.
You know, and the quadruple bypass burger that the Heart Attack Grill serves is on this list. So they made the This Is Why You're Fat blog.
Now, I think for a lot of listeners, they might go to this blog and see these huge servings of food that are absolutely insane for size and calories. And they're thinking, well, I don't eat this amount of food. And that may not be it, because we talked about over a number of years, only eating an extra 200 or 300 calories, even if it's healthy food, that can put on the weight as well. But this is just showing what extreme sizes and our culture has become larger and larger. But we're not saying that all of our listeners eat this kind of stuff, but it is interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, this is the kind of one-off food you might find at a a county fair or something like that. And, you know, something you might have once a year. But I would almost guarantee that nobody out here in our listening audience has had one of these items on a regular basis or even semi-regular basis, because they're just too much.
Yeah, I would agree.
All right, let's get into our feature section for this week. And today we have an interview.
Joining us right now from New Jersey is Tom Venuto. Tom Venuto might be the most recognized name on the internet right now as a fitness and weight loss expert. For the last 20 years, he has been involved in virtually every aspect of the fitness and weight loss industry. He's worked as a personal trainer, a nutrition consultant, motivation coach, fitness model, health club manager, and has written two best-selling books. His first book was called Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle, and was released as an ebook, which has been the most popular fitness ebook on the internet for several years. His most recent book, entitled The Body Fat Solution, 5 Principles for Burning Fat, Building Lean Muscle, Ending Emotional Eating, and Maintaining Your Perfect Weight, is now a bestseller on Amazon.com. So Tom is simply an all-around fitness guru. Now, on the personal level, we all have positive mentors that inspire us. For many of our listeners, it's myself and Russ, and we're very grateful when we hear from people who tell us how we've helped them. It truly keeps us going. But before I could inspire anyone here, I had to get my own life together, and it was Tom Venuto who I used as my mentor. He is responsible for really solidifying a lot of my current beliefs and attitudes that I talk about on the show all the time. I've read almost everything that he's written or published in the last few years, and I'll vouch for him that he really knows his stuff. It was his inspiration and knowledge that put me on the path to get into top shape and stay there. I've corresponded with Tom over the years, and 4 years ago, I actually sent Tom my series of before and after pictures of myself as I lost weight and gained muscle, just to thank him and to show him what I had accomplished with his help. And by the way, those pictures are on jeffthejock.com. There's a link right near the top left where you can see what I actually sent Tom a couple years ago. And I'm crediting him for not necessarily teaching me a lot of new stuff, but he taught me how to put it all together, which is really the most important thing. So back to the show. Tom has such a wide range of experience and knowledge that thankfully he has agreed to do 2 different interviews with us. So today we are talking with Tom all about personal trainers and personal training in general. We have had many people over the last couple of months ask us to do a show on personal trainers, and Tom has been one and managed other trainers, so we are definitely going to get the inside scoop. So, welcome to the show, Tom Venuto.
Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right, so today, first, we're going to talk a little bit about personal training. Now, Tom's been a personal trainer in the past, and we wanted to get a little information on what it's like on the other side of that relationship.
Sounds good.
So first of all, Tom, what sort of professional experience have you had as a personal trainer and a health club manager?
Well, I've been working out since I was 14 years old, so that's more than 25 years of training experience. And I've been a fitness professional as a career for more than 20 years. I got my degree in exercise science, and then I got started as a personal trainer in gyms and health clubs immediately after I graduated. And after about 6 or 7 years of that, I also started getting involved in the health club business. I was an assistant health club manager and then a club manager, and then I became a general manager of several clubs, and I did that for about 10 years. And then in 1999, I discovered the internet. I went online with my first fitness website, and I started doing coaching programs. I was still working in the gyms, and I started bringing people in the gym to meet with me locally at the club, and I coached people all over the world through the internet and with telephone. And then the internet business took off for me so much, and my coaching business and my writing career, that in 2004 I retired from the gym business and from personal training, and I went full-time as a writer and an internet publisher. And I still work with clients on and off now in groups and one-on-one, but just as coaching. So I'm no longer training people one-on-one, but I'm still working in the fitness industry.
So you have an exercise science degree. What other certifications did you get, or what would you recommend people to even look for? There's so many out there.
Yeah, there's so many certifications and even personal trainer schools and institutes today. I really can't even keep track of them anymore. It's actually become a whole industry, a really big business. I started with the organizations that had a great reputation 20 years ago when I started, and I still do, the National Strength and Conditioning Association and the American College of Sports Medicine. I can definitely highly recommend. And I do know there's many other good programs, but I do consider those some of the top-tier choices and a great place for anyone who wants to know where to start with certifications.
All right, so you've had all experience now. When your first years of training, you know, what kind of were the biggest mistakes you saw when you were a trainer in your first years?
Mistakes I saw from other trainers or mistakes that I made?
Well, mistakes that you made and assumptions or things that were not actually true when you got into the practice.
Well, in my first year, I was green like anybody else. I was a newbie. I didn't have much practice or theory. You know, I started training when I was 14, so you could say I already had 6 years of experience, but that was experience training myself and not other people. And the extent of my education was Muscle Mag International and Muscle and Fitness and Flex Magazine. But, you know, everybody gets started as a beginner. If you're fortunate, you get to intern or learn from other good trainers, and your knowledge base starts to grow. I didn't really think that I was making any mistakes or leaving any big gaps. I was really conscientious. I was professional, courteous. I was really focused on getting results for people. I'd say if there's any mistake, looking back, I'd say that the limit of my knowledge was bodybuilding. So I think what I've learned over the years is how to train other people who had no interest in bodybuilding, because that's what I was brought up on, was the bodybuilding way. And to prescribe a workout for somebody who's not a bodybuilder, just for the average Jane or Joe, people who's really busy. And if there's a mistake I see in other trainers today that I've learned from my experience, it's prescribing the wrong workout for the wrong person. And really the key is to be able to individualize your workout.
I came up with that question actually a little bit earlier. And my reasoning for asking that, I did a little bit of personal training when I was in university getting a phys ed degree. And when I think of the stuff that I know now compared to, you know, 15, 20 years ago, I'm kind of embarrassed because I have so much more life experience and things that I've learned along the way. For myself, I would have just given people really cookie cutter routines.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the phrase that I would use, that what you have to be careful not to do is cookie cutter your programs. And the fitness industry has come so far, even in the last 5 years, it's amazing watching how it's evolved. There's more choices than ever. There's more knowledge than ever. Trainers have more resources, more tools, even more equipment. I mean, look at the types of equipment that are changing, that are becoming popular now, kettlebells and functional training implements. And, you know, we have all these tools, so it should be a lot easier to give the right person, the right training program to each person, but we still see a bodybuilding program given to somebody who has absolutely no bodybuilding goals.
So when you're first starting out, how did you attract new clients? I mean, I've worked in gyms and been in gyms where people are kind of walking around the room trying to pick up people who look like newbies. Were people being sold a personal training package when they came in the door and signed up, or did you have to try and attract your own clients?
Well, I had to attract my own clients from day one, but I think something that made it a lot easier for me, the fact that I was a bodybuilder, the way I looked, it was definitely an advantage. You know, I was my best advertisement. If you walk around in phenomenal shape, you don't have to do that much advertising. I had an experience where people would just walk right up to me, even when I was off the clock and I was doing my own workouts, and say, how do you look like that? So I think that's actually some pretty good business advice, too, to other trainers. Who's not in phenomenal shape is to walk the walk. It makes a big difference, and you don't have to do so much advertising because you're like a walking billboard.
Oh, so when you find that new client, you know, what steps do you take when you're going to start their training process? I mean, you don't get them right on the equipment right away? Do you talk to them beforehand about fitness overall? What's the process there?
Well, absolutely. You have to go through an assessment. There's fitness tests you can do for strength and for cardiovascular. Body composition, I like to break out the skinfold calipers and see what the body fat to muscle ratio is. You can do functional movement screens where you go through certain exercises like an overhead squat and see if there's any dysfunction. See a basic medical history. Definitely find out if there's any history of orthopedic or health problems so you can customize the workout and be sure it's a safe workout. And what I like to do is spend some serious time talking about goals and goal setting. And just that way there's a great focus and the mind is focused right from the beginning.
What sort of clients do you end up rejecting, or do you pretty much accept anyone?
Well, that's funny that you ask, because I have a reputation for having fired clients before, and I've had clients who said, you can't fire me, I'm the client. And I said, yeah, I certainly can fire you. So I would reject anybody who is looking for a quick fix or who isn't going to work hard at it or who's inconsistent. And people who are just really deeply pessimistic. You know, I don't like to spend a lot of time with negative people, even if it's in my business. And I'll do the best that I can to lift somebody up and motivate people. But if I don't feel like somebody's committed or they're just extremely negative, it's not the kind of person that I really want around me.
So what are some of the most successful clients you've had? You know, were they, what made them successful in their training?
Well, if I think back to when I started, to my one-on-one training clients back, you know, 15, 20 years ago, I have lost touch with some of them. But when I got into coaching, in-person coaching and long-distance coaching, and when I released my ebook in 2002, a lot of people followed my program, either from the coaching program or they followed the guidelines in my book. And I've had some phenomenal successes from those people. And a lot of them I still keep touch with today through my inner circle, and I keep touch with them by email. Some of them that come to mind, because I do an ongoing success story series of interviews on how people lost their weight. I just did an interview with Mary Kay Valenti. She dropped 97 pounds, and she was obese since childhood. She was obese 20 years, and now she's just done her first figure competition. Bonnie Van Niekerk from South Africa, she dropped 51 pounds after she had gained a ton of weight after having three kids. She hit her all-time lowest body fat at 41 years old, and now she's getting ready for a figure competition. Dennis Geiger, we interviewed, he had a hip replacement, and people told him he would never do any exercise. He was more than 100 pounds overweight. He dropped 107 pounds using Burn the Fat. Micah Gorick lost 137 pounds. We just spoke to Cece Evola. She had her knee completely kicked in backwards in martial arts. They told her she'd never do anything. She'd walk with a brace. She lost 173 pounds, and now she's doing triathlons. And one that really stands out is Mike Boyd, who dropped 253 pounds. And those are just some of the ones off the top of my head I know because we interviewed them. I think what they all have in common is I could pick out things from nutrition and training, but they all had a certain mindset and attitude. It was a whatever-it-takes type of attitude. It was definitely a no-excuses type of attitude. And they all went into this with a hard work ethic. And they all said to me, you know, hey, Tom, one of the things I really appreciated the most about you and your program is you didn't lie about how hard it's going to be. You said, look, this isn't easy. Maybe it's simple, but it's not easy. And they all had this tremendous desire and work ethic. And, you know, that reminds me of the Napoleon Hill book. You know, he talked about this burning desire, and that's what they all had. So I think it was more attitude and mindset and personality traits that they had in common, because even among those people who were following my program, their nutrition was customized and their training was customized because some of them had injuries they had to work around. So it was more about the mind, I think, than it was about the training or the diet.
That sounds excellent. What happens to those people who you're coaching or training and they don't really ever seem to have a lot of success? You can't really see what they're doing wrong. So what do you think are some possible ways that even if you're training them, What went wrong? Was it their expectations, their compliance, determination, motivation? What do you think are the most important things that can sabotage someone's success?
Well, I don't think I ever had any in-person clients that had no success. I've had people who told me they bought my book and then they got back to me later and said, well, it didn't work, but I didn't have any personal interaction with them. So I don't even know if they read the book. I don't know if they followed the program. I don't know if they kept the progress chart. I don't know if they journaled their workouts. I don't know if they had menus printed and so on. But with my personal clients, they all got results. Some of them did fall short of their goal. For example, they said, I want to cut 6% body fat in this 12-week program, and I only cut 4%. But I considered that a success. So what that tells me is that one of the keys is accountability, that there's a lot of power in accountability when you're checking in with somebody in person, or even if you're doing a program over the internet, if it's a coaching program where there's accountability, having someone you report to has got to increase your results compared to somebody who just buys a book and if they read it and if they don't have an accountability system to go with that. I think that's one way that people go wrong. So if people go out and buy a book, I think it's fantastic. I think they should look for a way to make themselves accountable to following that program, though.
What quality should one of our listeners say, if they're looking for a personal trainer, what quality should they look for? And what things, what characteristics should they avoid when they're looking at a personal trainer?
I have a pet peeve in personal trainers, and that's trainers who are always looking around and not paying attention to their clients. They're paying more attention to who's walking in the gym and who's on the treadmills. So attentive, being attentive is extremely important. When you're with a trainer, you should be the center of the universe as far as that trainer is concerned. Definitely results-oriented. Everything has to come back to results. Because I know there's a lot of trainers who are really dogmatic about a certain style or method. I can make a confession and admit that from experience. If I think back 15 or 20 years ago, I was dogmatic about bodybuilding. And I would train everybody like a bodybuilder. And if somebody is just locked into one system, they can get so locked into that that they won't change it and they're not getting results and they just keep stubbornly doing the same thing and they're not getting results. And I think that probably the number one criteria trainers got to have is they're there to get you results, period. They're not there to defend their personal beliefs or their dogma, which ties into another one, which is to be flexible. A trainer's got to be flexible. And I think there's a lot to be said for a trainer that's got a little bit of attitude, a little bit of a drill sergeant. I don't think it's any coincidence if you look at how popular boot camp is today. It's exploding. I think it's probably one of the most fastest growing parts of the fitness industry is the boot camps. And I think there's a reason for that. I mean, literally, if you got the guy, barking at you, three more reps. I mean, you need someone to push you. That's what a trainer is there for, help you break some comfort zones.
So we know what to look for in a good trainer. So how would you find out if a certain trainer was actually going to be that type of person? What sort of questions would you ask them if you are going to interview trainers?
Well, I would probably ask somebody else first, or at least after I had talked to a trainer, I would ask for a referral. I don't think you can beat a good referral from somebody else. If you're trying to find a good trainer, if that's the goal, and you get a referral who's somebody who's already working with them from someone you know and trust, you almost can't go wrong with that, if you trust their judgment. I think also a trainer has to have a good track record of results. Like I said before, they got to be results-oriented. So if you're going to ask a trainer a question, ask to see some success stories. I just gave you a list of some success stories. Every trainer should have a list of success stories, and you should be able to see them. And if you can talk to those people, that's even better.
So I was just wondering, I was talking to a person earlier today about personal trainers, and they said, I really couldn't handle someone standing right beside me and watching me and critiquing me all the way through a workout. Are there ways that people can kind of get around that shyness?
Well, I guess everybody has their own individual style. There's some people that insist they don't need a trainer and they don't want a trainer. They might feel more comfortable in a group where there's maybe 15 people to one trainer. I mean, I think that the one-to-one training is actually starting to get less common, and so somebody might feel more comfortable in a group. Or somebody might look for a coach. I was a coach for many, many years. I still am. And that's a situation where you go to a professional and have them write your training program for you, where you feel capable of going and doing the exercises yourself, but you just want help with the program. So hire somebody to design the program for you, and it's a killer program, and then you go do it on your own. So you have different options. It doesn't have to be one-on-one training anymore.
So what are the limitations of an average personal trainer? What's out of their control? If Are they telling the client, you know, what to eat, and they're expecting them to comply with those rules they're setting down?
Well, after a client leaves the gym, everything is pretty much out of the trainer's control. What they eat, for sure, whether they get enough sleep, whether they smoke or drink or do drugs, you know, a person's whole lifestyle. The trainer only has that hour in the gym. The rest is going to be up to the client. So, I mean, that's a limitation to what the trainer can do for a person. Some trainers will prescribe a menu or prescribe tell the clients what to eat. But, you know, how do we know that the person's going to follow it? Because, you know, no matter how perfect the workout is in the gym, 3 or 4 times a week, if nutrition's poor, you're not going to get results, especially if you're talking about body fat loss, because you got to have a calorie deficit. That's the prerequisite. So you can have perfect workouts, but you can't out-train a lousy diet, they say. If you're eating too much, you'll gain fat in spite of these workouts. So, you know, it's the lifestyle, and we can't, it's cliche, the fitness lifestyle, but we can't talk about it too much. It's not just what you do in a gym every day. It's out of the gym. So a good trainer might help with nutrition. The client might go somewhere else to get help with nutrition. But the best thing a trainer can do is influence the lifestyle of the client some way, so that after the client walks out the door, there's been some kind of lasting impact on the person's lifestyle. And if that's guidance and nutrition, great. If it's motivation, some kind of motivation or accountability system, anything the trainer can do to get the person to stick with it the rest of the time after they walk out the door is going to help get better results.
Now, the last question we have for you might surprise a lot of people here, but you've mentioned that you have had the same personal trainer for the last 12 years, and you've been a competitive natural bodybuilder for many years, and you've been training others for years and years. So why do you have a personal trainer yourself? Isn't it like a professional chef hiring someone to cook for them?
You know, it's funny you ask me that, because I was just on the Martha Stewart Living radio show, which is on Sirius, and the host said the exact same thing. She's like, you have a trainer? Why do you have a trainer? I hear that all the time. Well, don't you think a professional chef could learn some new recipes from another professional chef? You know, I see training programs a lot like recipes. You know, the potential mixing and matching of all the ingredients, it's never ending. There's literally no possible limit. I'll never forget a lecture I went to. I saw Dr. William Kramer, the strength and conditioning professor, do a speech, and he was talking about the acute training variables. And he was saying how if you take the incredible number of exercises, the thousands of exercises there are to do, and you take the acute training variables, sets, reps, weight, tempo, rest periods, frequency, and then all the little sub-variables, the stuff that we bodybuilders do, like supersets and static holds and, you know, a stretch here and a peak contraction there and a drop set, infinite number of workouts. And I don't think that any one single brain can ever come up with all the possible workout combinations. And personally, I'm a perpetual student. I constantly want to learn, and I'm never going to stop learning. And that's one reason that I have a trainer, and I have mentors in every area of my life, in business, personal development. But if you really think about it, it's almost kind of silly for any serious athlete or somebody who's serious about any craft or business not to have some kind of trainer or coach or mentor. I mean, you're leaving so much on the table. If you don't, you have no idea how much you're leaving on the table. And because a trainer goes way beyond taking you through a workout and giving you that different workout variety. I mean, you always have 3 more reps in you, always, and your trainer's going to get them out of you. And, you know, with someone looking over your shoulder, you're always pushing a little bit harder. And it's even more than that 3 more reps. If you have, everybody has so much potential that they don't give themselves credit for. You know, we're like prisoners inside of our own comfort zones, inside of our own limiting beliefs. And the good trainer is a coach, and the good coach gets you to see the potential that you didn't see that you had, and then he helps you draw that out of you. So, I mean, if you've never experienced a really good trainer, then you have absolutely no idea how much is being left on the table. There's so much more in you, and a trainer and a coach is the way to get it.
Well, thanks, Tom. That was a ton of information, and I'm sure everyone learned a lot.
Thanks, guys. It was a pleasure being with you, and if you guys would like to have me back at any time, I'll be available.
Okay, sounds good. Well, now it's time to move on to the recipe of the week. So what do you have for us this week, Russ?
Well, listener Karen, who sent us a comment, also sent along a recipe that was linked to over at sparkpeople.com. It is for something called versatile brown rice salad. And you may think, you know, how versatile is brown rice? Well, with this little recipe, you could serve it alongside some chicken breasts, some tuna, salmon or so. Add egg whites for a breakfast scramble. serve it on a bed of lettuce for a quick, tasty, hearty lunch, stuff it in a pita pocket, make a quick tortilla soup, and you can freeze it in portion sizes for later on eating. And so you might be thinking, how is this possible? Well, it's called versatile brown rice salad. Take a look at the link in the show notes to see all the ingredients to put in your versatile brown rice salad. But Jeff, it sounds like something that you would make.
I do like in the first sentence when it's talking about this recipe, how it says it's a great thing to make in large batches and use for several meals throughout the week, because I'm all about cooking less and getting more out of it.
Yeah, I can see actually this is reminding me a lot of a pasta salad. And so I'm more attracted to this recipe when it would be cold rather than hot myself. But, it might taste good either way.
Well, we'll have a link in the show notes if you are interested in learning about this rice recipe.
All right. So, Jeff, what do we have for homework for everybody this week?
Earlier today, I was responding to a person in our support group site at fattofitsupport.com, and he was concerned about gaining just a real slight amount of weight 1 week, even though he was eating quite a low number of calories. It got me thinking about what his real goal in losing weight was. Is he going to be fulfilled when his scale says a certain number, or does he really want to just be a smaller person and fit into smaller clothing? So, how many inches have our listeners lost from around your waist, hips, belly, thighs, or anything else you care to measure? If you truly want to be smaller, start measuring these things and tracking these things. Get a measuring tape and start recording. It doesn't really matter exactly what you record. Just keep measuring the same places to track your results over time. If the scale stays the same, but you're getting smaller around your waist, you know, who really cares?
Yeah, there are times in those plateaus where you're not going to be losing much weight, but your body changes, especially when you're lifting weights and and doing some great cardio work. Your body changes, and you're going to get smaller, but you may weigh about the same amount.
That's so true.
Yep. So, Jeff, what is our quote for the week?
Well, this week's quote comes from Will Rogers, and he said, "Even if you are on the right track, you will get run over if you just sit there."
All right. I want to thank Alex and Karen for the comments and for the great recipe this week. Also, want a big thanks for Tom Venuto for coming on the show and talking about training and finding a personal trainer. It was great information. All the links that we mentioned on the show are found in the show notes over at fat2fitradio.com for show number 56. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Send your feedback or questions to podcast@fattofitradio.com. For more information on today's show or any previous shows, visit the website at fattofitradio.com. If you would like to support the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast directory.